welcome to our Westmeath Local History Podcast. And today we're chatting with Jason McKevitt. Jason, thank you for joining us
this afternoon.
First of all, I suppose the big question is, what is it that has brought you to local studies, to local history, and what is it that maintains your interest?
What has brought me to local studies and history is the fact that when I was growing up, I spent most of my life with my granny and granddad. And they were two interesting people. So they gave me this love of history. And how did that happen? Because I suppose this is pre-Sky television, you know. And my granny and granddad were interesting people from interesting backgrounds. My granddad was a Dublin man. And his family originally were from Loud on that. McKevitt is a surname. And his father, William McKevitt, was a poor law guardian for the South Dublin Poor Law Union. And he was with the United Irish League back in the 1900s. So that was interesting to me. And then when granddad came to Mullingar, he came with the army. And he served with Major Vivian de Valera. So you can imagine my background there. I come from this old Irish nationalist Republican background, and which became more into Fianna Fáil, kind of with the de Valera connection. And then Granny's side, Granny came from a very dichotomous family, because Granny's dad had served in the First World War in the trenches, and had served at the Somme, and was captured as a prisoner of war in 1918. And Granny was an interesting lady in that, you know, you imagine this little Irish granny grew up in these little British Army houses in Clonmore, because her dad was had survived the war at this stage. But when Second World War broke out, or emergency as we call it in Ireland, granny wanted to join the Irish Army, but women couldn't join the Irish Army. So her father went down to a chap called Colonel Harris, who I believed lived down around the Ballinderry area, and he advised him, contacted the British Army, and her and her two sisters went off and joined the ATS in the north. And during the Battle of Britain, she was an anti-aircraft gun in Coventry. So you can see, my granny was in the army, my granny was in the Irish army, you know, and then, near the end of the war, granny came back to Ireland to look after her father, who had an accident. He was a baker by trade, by the way, and he had an accident in Mullally's bakery where he worked in the town. So granny came back from the ATS, Auxiliary Territorial Service, which I believe the Queen had served in as well. It was the Women's Wing of the British Army. Came back to Ireland after fighting the Nazis or on an anti-aircraft gun during the Battle of Britain. I met my granddad in the Coliseum Museum in Mullingar, this young Irish soldier. And the irony of ironies is here, my granny had seen more action than he did at this stage.
It sounds like from day one, your family have just been steeped in history and personal experiences as well.
Personal experience, because then years later, granddad went out to the Congo and he served at the Battle of the Tunnel. And this was just after Jadeville. So he went out with the 36th Infantry Battalion and he saw a bit of action there. So yeah, steeped in history. So that's my background.
And what is it about writing then? How did the interest in writing about local history? Because you've got the experiences, but was there a history of writing in the family, or are you the first historian to write in the family?
I'm probably the first historian, but we're also an artsy family. On my mother's side, my mother was a cabna, and her father was a musician. And on her mother's side was Dunn, and he was a musician. John Dunn was a musician. So I come from that arts side of the family. And so I suppose with me at writing, my sister Teresa is a poet, and she had a book published there recently, you know, a book of poetry. Mm. So Teresa's into all that. It goes by Tess McKevitt, she goes by. Mm. And my brother Lara was a musician, and he has played with Bagatelle, and he's played with the Furies. So there you go, that artsy thing. Now, poetry and me, I like poetry, and I like music. So what can I do with that? And I look at the history, so I come on the history side, so that's where my art is, that's my craft. I would hope it's a craft, I hope people would view it as my craft. Yeah.
Do you feel more like you're the discoverer of facts, figures, mysteries? Is that your little talent?
I suppose if there's any kids listening to this, I feel like Dora the Explorer, do you know? Because I go out there with my little torch and I find things in the map and the swiper and all this. And I suppose it's one thing what people don't realise about being a historian, right? You've got to feel it in the heart. It's a passion, okay? Because when most people are maybe out on a GA pitch, or maybe some people are down having a beer, people like me are found in the archives, trawling through depths of paperwork, finding out history. Mm. And there's this sort of nosiness there. And find out, why did that happen? And you see, one thing about being a local historian, we like to challenge the master narrative. We like to see what really happened, the social side of things, what the small people did, We know what the great Devil Lear did. We know what the great General Michael Collins did. But what did Mickey Murphy and Patrick Street do? Or what did Mary do down in Berwick Street? So we like to know all that sorts of stuff.
Mm.
And that's the inquisitive side of me. And I just love it. And I love finding new stuff. And I every time, it's almost like a drug. Because when I'm in research, and then I find out something, I get so excited. It's like a buzz. It's like an adrenaline kick. And it's actually amazing. And I could be in National Archives in Dublin. I could be in Military Archives. Or I could be here in Westmead County Library, here in Mullingar Branch Library. And I find something. And I go, wow, look at this now that I've just found. So, you know.
And when it comes to your research, how could you be researching for months, years? What kind of work needs to go into a piece that a historian writes?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it depends what you're researching. For instance, let's say someone finds an old picture of a shop in Mullingar, and they go, oh, the name over the shop there, for instance. Let's say, for instance, where Ilia Cafe is. That, if you're a proud Irish nationalist person, that is a very historic building to us that love our country, because that was the home of the Moynihans, and that's where Ceoltas, the first words of Ceoltas, the idea of Ceoltas was right in that building there, do you know?
Yeah.
And I suppose if you're looking at something like that, let's say that building, for instance, you would go, right, I need to find out more about that. And what I found out about that building, here's an irony for you now. Actually, that building, do you know, you're talking about research, because I wanted to find out more about it. Not just about the mind, what was it before? Because those buildings are a couple of hundred years old. And what we find out is that, yes, you had the drawing room upstairs and above the shop where Moynihan family lived. And that's where the idea, Eamon Moynihan and Banu Munachan, this is where they came together, the concept of Ceoltas and the concept of, you know, Irishness and how we preserve our culture was actually in that drawing room in front of that fireplace. And the fireplace is still there now, I've been told. The same fireplace that they had to chat about the family of Ceoltas is now still there in Ilia Cafe. But what's amazing here, and here's an amazing piece about that, so I wanted to find out more about it. And it turns out that if you go probably 50 years previously, there was a family called Rogers owned it, and they were hardcore unionists.
So it's complete opposite.
They owned a drugstore there and a bicycle repair shop. Members of the Church of Ireland community here in Mullingar, very well respected, but hardcore unionists. Completely opposite
of who was ended up there.
Of what the building afterwards, you know, the family that were there. So we've Irish Republicans in 1950 and onwards, and before that, with unionists.
Yeah.
So that is just, you know, stuff like that amazes me. But you asked the question, how long could it take? For instance, I'm looking at the history of the Colin Barracks Mullingar there. It's taken forever. You have moments of serendipity. You have to be disciplined, because I could go in there, I'm looking for a piece, I'm finding a piece, let's say, about a regiment that was based there in, let's say, 1860. And next thing, I'm checking through the microfilms here in the local history room, and next I spot something else. A little article right beside what I'm checking, and then I go off another tangent, because then I find there's something completely different. Maybe I'm looking at, oh, the regiment was there, next thing there's a big thing, oh, the ball that happened in the gymnasium in the military barracks, Mullingar. And I said, oh, look at this ball, what happened there, who were the people there, and who was that person there now, and why was he there? And then I go off on another tangent, because even with the barracks then, it was through this little bit of research in 1850 that I found out a member of the royal family was in the barracks there, Prince George of Cambridge.
Wow.
Yeah, and we see that Prince William and Kate Middleton's son is also called Prince George of Cambridge. But the last time there was a Prince George of Cambridge, he came to Mullingar.
He came to Mullingar.
There you go.
Okay, you talk about, you know, passion and that for to be a historian. Some people think that you have to be qualified to be a historian. I don't think you have to be. Do you think it's useful, or is it really you need to have the passion first of all?
The curiosity? The biggest qualification to be a historian, especially a local historian, is passion. Now, okay, I have the qualifications. I've level 9 postgrad and all this. I have university education and that. And I find the university education is great, because by doing that, it trains me of how to find stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, if you go into the archives, you don't really know what you're doing or what you're looking for. You could spend forever there and find nothing. Whereas when you're trained in the area, you know exactly. Let's say the famine, for instance, if I go to National Archives. If I want to find out a bit more, I know I have to look for the outrage reports. You know, to find out, you know, these correspondences between maybe the local constabulary or the military, or even people to the Viceroy, to Dublin Castle. So I know what I'm looking for. I want to find out stuff. Whereas I suppose if I don't have that training and I go, I want to find out about the famine, the person in the archives is like, well, where, what, when, what exactly are you looking for? Well, yeah. I want to find out about that. And he's going, right. So when you know, you're saving time, because any historian will tell you research is time consuming.
Yeah.
And you need to minimise that time, because most of us work. But do you need a third level qualification? Okay, I have it, and I know the other historians have. But not necessarily. A passion is the main thing. An understanding and a love for your area is the most greatest qualifications you can have. As I said, a university qualification, that arms you with a bit more tools, if you like.
It helps you with the research tools, but the actual, to be a historian, if you don't, if it's not in you, you're,
if it's
you
not in
be
you, it won't happen. It won't happen. It's a passion. It's like being a musician. It's like being anything. Mm. If you don't have a love for music, you're not going to do too well. Like, you won't sell many tickets. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and that's why it is a story. It's a passion. And it's even like me. I'm even talking about it here, and I'm feeling passionate in it.
I can see it in you. You're getting lively.
Yeah.
When it comes to somewhere like the local history room here, how valuable do you think having something like this in Mullingar is to local historians, and even just to people who want to find out something about the church or the graveyard in their area? Can you see there being any other location where they can get information?
Well, I have to say the local history room here is so important because you've everything you need in the one area. I mean, I'm just looking there. You have even a history there of the Diocese of Meath. You have all maps. You have all newspapers here. You have secondary sources such as books. I mean, if you didn't have a local history room and you were trying to source all that, again, time-consuming, you'd be going to maybe the cathedral to the diocese archives there, then you may be going up to the examiner office to find the old newspapers, then you might be going there. Yet this room, here it is all packed in. Mm-hmm. So for the researcher, for the historian, is excellent. But most importantly, I mean, people like me are passing through life. Most important, rooms like this is where the younger generation get a grow for this. By bringing in the school kids, by bringing them in, showing them these rooms, showing them this is your history, this is what happens, and it's all here. Like if you were little, let's say even an 8-year-old, and you say, okay, right, I'm going to tell you about the history of the Catholic Church here in Mullingar and the Diocese of Meath, but you have to go over to the cathedral to get that, and then come back down, and I want you to find out about when the cathedral was built in Mullingar, but you have to go to the examiner office to find out in the archives, and then I mean, the child after a while go, oh, this is a great adventure. Then they go, oh, I'm a bit bored here now. Whereas when you have it in one room, they can see it. Mm-hmm. They can actually, you can go on an adventure within this room. You can do time travelling in this room. Mm-hmm. This is like a little time capsule here. And for people like me, we just love it. I mean, I love this room.
Yeah. Just getting back to your writing, are you working on a couple of pieces at the moment now? I assume there's short term, long term,
yeah.
Or do you try to concentrate on one piece at a time?
I try to give passion into one piece at a time, but there is a piece that I keep stopping, holding, working and whatever. I suppose I was working on executions in Mullingar, but the military executions in 1923 with Michael Green and Luke Burke were the last executions in Colin Barracks. But also I've been looking at maybe the last execution here, where we're sitting here in the county buildings here, which is Johnny Cronin in January 1886. So I'm looking at that. So I'm writing a piece about that, hopefully for publication in the newspapers. I've also written a short history for Colin Barracks, a little history sign for when people pass the barracks, that they would see a quick history of the barracks, because we see the barracks there and people are still wondering, and now the tours have stopped because the barracks is, you know, other stuff's going on in the barracks. It'd be nice to people if maybe to go to barrack and see a sign, quick history, especially for the kids going in and out. Mm-hmm. Again, I keep emphasising that. Long term, what I am looking at is the history of Colin Barracks. And this is, as I said, it's taken a while. I have a fair bit done. I suppose at the moment I have what you would call a master's thesis level done on it. But there's more to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time you open one door, you close one door, another door opens in the barracks. And again, as I said earlier, there's moments of serendipity. You think you know it all and then you find mm-hmm. something, you go, wow.
When it comes to your writings, I think a lot of people think that if you're a local historian, you're only going to be writing books. But it sounds like you write like articles for newspapers, mm-hmm. you write for websites, you write for signs. So to be a local historian writing, it's not just about producing a book.
No, and even in modernity, what we're finding, it's about your podcasts, it's about your videos. Like, I have videos out there. And what I've noticed as well, and we've done it through Tidy Towns, I've done sort of local history in a couple of minutes, or a few minutes, let's say, because where I'd maybe be outside the Church of Ireland. And look, I understand as a teacher myself, Universal Design for Learning and Differentiation, that sometimes people struggle with the written word.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to look at other ways of getting our message across. So you're doing these little podcasts, you're doing these videos. So let's say, for instance, with Tidy Towns there, I realise that some people's even train of thought, the attention span of a person. I mean, I could do a 20-minute video on executions in Mullingar, but after about 5 minutes, people go, oh, that's all right, you know, and, you know, because attention span of people, whereas we've learned that maybe even little TikTok-type style of history things, a couple of minutes, you know, no more than that. Just get them going and bang. And we did one there with the Church of Ireland, we did with the Cathedral, and we've done things like that where I'd speak a little bit of history, and it's like a little adventure where, you know, I come across on the screen, let's go on this little adventure. What was this building? What was that building? And bang. So I suppose I'm always researching small little things as well. But, and it's not just about the written word. I love the written word. And of course, before I can do these videos, I have to have a script myself. I mean, I have to work with a storyboard myself, do you know? But I'm saying that, you know, you're looking at all this other type of modern type way of getting your point across as well.
So, what do you think of the modern local history room, like here? Because, yes, we have the books, we have maps, we have microfilm, but we also have the podcasts, we have the videos, we have the e-books that you can download. Do you think there's other ways we can go? I mean, like, we're trying to digitise maps and stuff like that. Can you see that being more of the future of local history, of being able to access stuff more quickly, more easily?
Yeah, the digitization of stuff is so important. I mean, especially your microfilm here. I mean, the moment here, like, I love looking at the old Westmeath Guards and the old newspapers, but on your microfilm, you're taking down a reel, and it takes a while to get this reel, and then you're rolling through the reel, and then you're trying to find it. Whereas you digitize it, then you have something like, you know, Irish Newspaper Archive, where you put in a word, a keyword, and bang, all these things appear. So digitization is important, and even on maps, it's important. You know, and it is important. But I'm also aware that while some of us like digitization, some of us like hard copies as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I like that as well. If I'm reading something, now anyone that's environmentalist now mightn't like me for this, but I kind of print off an awful lot of stuff so I can read it properly, because I struggle reading for too long online.
Yeah.
You know, so I like to print off stuff to check for typos and check for stuff, and when I'm reading stuff, you know. So there's a place for everything.
So in local history, you do see it as being as many mediums as possible, making it as open as possible.
UDL, I mean, teacher training, you're taught this. Universal Design for Learning, we all learn differently. I mean, we're kinesthetic learners, we're audio learners, we're visual learners, and that's the way history should be portrayed. I mean, you know, as I said, through your video, through your hard copies, through everything, you know. But I think the most important thing is that people, especially young people coming up, is respect history and respect the artefacts and respect local history rooms. And even when they're coming here carrying a bit of research, make sure you don't bring in a biro. You know, bring in a pencil, don't mark stuff. You know, have that protection. And dare I say it, sometimes maybe if you're using old maps, please wear gloves. Just protect these pieces. I'd be a stickler for that. Do you know, I really would be, because I suppose when I'm dealing with all artefacts, which most of the stuff sometimes can be, you know, the primary sources are definitely artefacts, in my opinion, anyway. And when I'm going to that, I have respect for them. It's like I'm treating it like almost a person. They're giving me information. They're like a Shanachie. So I'm treating with respect. And, you know, I think that's another thing that people need to be aware of, is the respect for these artefacts and these rooms and all that.
This room, the local history room here in Mullingar, you've got a fair bit of experience here. Is there any memories that you have from here that you still hold?
Yeah, there are a few of them there. I mean, there's one day, I'm sitting around here, and about three or four different historians here, and we're all sitting around, and I'm just thinking to myself, we all took a fit of laugh, and we're all here looking at microfilms and books, and we're all looking at each other. And it was a beautiful day outside, and we're saying, why aren't we in the town park? You know, just chilling, and here we are in a room researching, you know, and I suppose that's a funny thing. Another thing is these moments of revelation. You find out a local family, and then you find out that maybe 150 years ago, maybe one of the local families was gentry in the town, and you're looking at what they owned in the town. So I find that fascinating. I do. Anytime I come in here, I'm quite excited, believe it or not. And I know some people go, what? But actually I am, because I'm always learning something new.
I think, is it the discovery, the potential discovery that always keeps you smiling?
It's the potential discovery and then the discovery, because you'll always find something. Mm. And I think that's another thing that people need to realise. Yes, we're historians, we're trained in the area, we know quite a bit, but we don't know it all. Because history is not definitive. We always learn something new every day. Do you know? And that's a key thing, and so that's why we need places like this. So every time I come in here, I always find out something new.
Well, there's one final question I need to ask you, Jason, now. What is the one item that you would love to bring home? Now, you're not actually allowed to bring it home, but that you would love to bring home. And it can be anything.
Oh, I tell you what I want. This.
Go on, what is it?
I want the keys of the room. That's exactly what I want, because I would spend the entire weekend in here. Do you know what I mean? And there's no open weekends. But if I could get the keys of the room and you hand them to me, then that's what I want. And then I could come in here and I could just, my heart's desire all weekend, spend my time here. And you know what would be even better? To be no one around, so I could just take my time. So the keys, I want the keys of the room.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much, Jason, for joining us today. It has been wonderful speaking with you. Thank you very much.
This is Past Perspectives, a Westmeath Libraries podcast.